KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. In recent years, the Oakland Police Department has been rocked by misconduct, a sexual exploitation scandal, and federal pressure to reform its practices. Filmmaker Peter Nix was embedded with the OPD for 2 years, following a police academy class as recruits learned how not to repeat mistakes from the past in this era where anything can be recorded on a cell phone.
One police officer can affect the credibility of a department, of a city. One police officer can have an impact on this whole country.
His new film about the OPD is called The Force. He joins us on Forum for the Hour, and we'll get started right after this news. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, in today for Michael Krasny. Well, the Oakland Police Department has been under federal investigation for more than a decade. Police chiefs have come and gone as the OPD has struggled to overcome a legacy of community mistrust, brutality, and most recently a sexual exploitation scandal involving a minor. Well, a new film titled The Force follows a class of OPD recruits over a 2-year period where the department is making progress, only to see it slide back into chaos. Here's a short clip from the film. It's called The Force, as I said. And in this clip, then-Chief Sean Wendt is at a community meeting and talking after a woman complains about slow police response after she was robbed.
We are trying to address that. I mean, is it good enough? No, of course it's not good enough. Should you be satisfied? No, you shouldn't be satisfied. Absolutely not. I mean, I'll be the first one to tell you that, do we provide the level of service that we want to provide? No. The level of service that you deserve? No. But we do the best that we can, and we ask a whole lot from those officers.
But your best ain't good enough.
Ma'am, I apologize for that.
That ain't gonna bring my stuff back.
No, it's not gonna bring your stuff back. But at this point, I mean, I don't know. I don't want to give you a false promise. I don't want to say that it'll never happen again. The last thing I want to do is come in here and lie to you.
Again, that clip is from The Force. It premieres at Bay Area theaters this weekend. And here to talk with us about it is filmmaker Peter Nix. Good to have you with us today.
Hey, Scott.
And by the way, he not only directed The Force, you may recall also his film The Waiting Room about Highland Hospital, which also came out a few years ago. Seems like just yesterday, but it was 2012. Also with us is Laron Armstrong. He's deputy chief with the Oakland Police Department, that also appears in this film. Good to have you with us this morning.
Thank you.
Ben McBride is a pastor and co-director of PICO California. He's founder of the Building Trust Through Reform Initiative, and he also is in the film. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here.
And joining us, too, is Alex Emsley. He's a criminal justice reporter with KQED News. Good morning, Alex.
Hi.
So let me begin with you, Pete. This film, which premieres this weekend in the Bay Area, you were embedded with the OPD for a couple of years. Tell us what was happening in the department when the film began.
Well, I like to say, you know, it was a long process trying to get access to the department. And the film was conceived out of making The Waiting Room, which was about access to health care. And we wanted to do really a trilogy examining the relationship between community and public institutions that are serving them. And I was having breakfast with my executive producer, John Ellis, one morning, and he was like, we should look at the police, you know. And so at that time, Black Lives Matter was not even a hashtag. And so in the intervening weeks and months that it took us to get access and begin filming, everything changed. Ferguson happened, and then the decision came down out of Ferguson not to charge the officer.
How did that change your role as a film crew, you know, embedded with the OPD?
That really shifted. Initially, our focus was really to examine a department that was under active reform. And so this is a department that had a long history going all the way back to the Panthers. And then most recently, out of the 2000 Rioter scandal, this was a department under federal watch that was under an active process in reform. And we felt it's our value proposition at Open Hood, which is my production company, is to get access to these places that are very difficult to get into. It's vital to our democracy to understand how these institutions are or are not working. And so when we began, that was our intent. And then initially, it was nothing but protest. After the Ferguson decision came down, we weren't out trying to understand who these officers were and how they were doing their job. We were just responding to what was happening on the ground level on the street.
What kind of access did you have? You were embedded with this academy of trainees, and then, of course, there are press conferences, and some of the most interesting clips, I thought, were the chief and others in the police department preparing for press conferences, kind of rehearsing the kinds of answers they're going to give when they step in front of the press. But how much access did you have? What would you have liked to see and film that you weren't allowed to do?
Well, every documentary filmmaker wants, you know, unfettered access, right? And I've heard this described as we had unfettered access, but, you know, we were being fettered every day by Jonna Watson, who appears in the film, who's the PIO at the department. It's a very complex environment where you have, you know, the chief, and we may have access to the chief, but the chief's meeting with people within the Justice Department from the outside who may not know about the film. And so it was a constant push and pull between us wanting to get as deeply on the inside, not just doing ride-alongs with the officers. We feel like we've seen that. You know, we wanted to sort of get as intimately involved in that process of reform as we could. And we could not get into every meeting. So it was a constant sort of negotiation that we had with the department.
And, of course, part of reform, it begins with training. And there are many scenes in the academy where there is instruction being given to these recruits. And a lot of this is about history of the department. How did the OPD get to the point where it is today? And I want to play a little clip. And this includes you, Deputy Chief Armstrong, and Pastor McBride talking about mistrust in the community.
This community has had instances that they can point to that affects the way they view you. Not you as an individual, but you in that police uniform. The Oakland Police Department has a history that's been contentious with this community.
Although some of us might say, that doesn't have anything to do with me. Man, all that stuff was hella a long time ago. But what I'm lifting up is the past stole your identity and ran up an incredibly high bill. And so many of us might show up in the story and be like, it's all BS. These folks complaining about stuff. These folks just making a mountain out of a molehill. But the past stole your identity, and it has run up an incredibly high bill. And everything that we do is either going to help run that bill up or it's going to bring that bill down.
Again, that clip from The Force about the Oakland Police Department. And Ron Armstrong, you were born and raised in Oakland. You are now deputy chief of the OPD. Talk about the bridge you have to, the divide that you have to bridge, how you have to straddle these very two different roles as a son of Oakland and someone who's there to enforce the law, but someone who also understands the history and how that complicates the relationship between the community and the police department. How do you navigate that?
Well, I think you embrace it, right? I think it's necessary in order for both perspectives to be heard. I think that's what I feel like I bring to the police department. I think when I came, I understood the difficult role I would find myself in is that I truly understand how it is to be raised in a community where you didn't trust law enforcement. But then I also have, the desire to change that, right, and really allow people to cultivate a relationship with law enforcement, but also encourage law enforcement to appreciate what it is to have a strong relationship with community. And so really that is something that I've been really moving forward on for many years is challenging people on both sides, challenging community to come to the table and sit down with law enforcement and challenging law enforcement to come beyond the walls, to get out the cars and connect with people, because that's what communities want to see. They want to have a police department that they can trust. And the only way you do that is to really strengthen those relationships.
And I think it comes through loud and clear in the film, the value of having police officers who look like the community, who can relate to the community, whether it's on a cultural basis or a language basis. But I'm wondering if you ever get pushback from people you knew when you were growing up who feel you in some way sold out, or that you're now working for, you know, what is seen as part of the problem in the community.
I think there's always going to be those that don't trust law enforcement and so assume that you're a different person because you have become a part of this institution. But then I say to people that you want to have a police department that you feel comfortable with people that you know and that you trust and that they understand your experience. And so I think although there are some that feel that way, I think that most people appreciate the fact that they know I truly understand what it's like to grow up in the streets of Oakland.
Ben McBride, I believe it's you in the film who is talking about that legacy of not just the police departments, but the government and lynching, going all the way back to lynchings and Jim Crow and the civil rights movement. And you can see these recruits listening as you're talking. What do you think is going through their minds as you hear them? Because I just looking at their faces, I see skepticism, I think.
Well, I think a lot of both the recruits and even officers that sat through a lot of the training that we did not necessarily know the history that we were sharing and understanding the way in which systemically and structurally these institutions have been connected to racism that contributed to the oppression of people of color all throughout this country. And so I think as they're hearing it, there is a difficulty that I've experienced in the training between folks experiencing that on an individual level and then trying to distance themselves from the way in which they are institutionally connected to this narrative. So what we are oftentimes trying to do is to help people to recognize that you don't have to necessarily embrace blue manity. You can embrace humanity and actually deal with the challenging past that we've had and see yourself as an agent of change to create a new future. But it's difficult because as folks come into the police department, as we've seen as we're training them, they are presented a certain culture that they have to connect to that doesn't always necessarily present them with an opportunity to connect to the community in the way that the deputy chief is talking about. And so we can provide the information. The deeper question is, how are we creating the systemic, the structural change that allows that information to actually be processed through their daily rituals?
Alex Emsley, you have been covering, of course, police departments in the Bay Area for some time now. And I'm wondering what your thoughts about the film are and how you see the Oakland Police Department being the same or different from, say, San Francisco, which has had some of these same issues like accusations of abuse of force, police brutality, shootings of unarmed black men, that kind of thing.
Well, I really appreciated the film because it did give some level of access just watching it kind of on a screen that I haven't had enough experience with, which is really looking at, you know, sort of the day-to-day challenges that officers face on the streets of Oakland. There was a scene where, you know, I've been at a million of these protests and you hear bottles being thrown crashing, but you see an officer kind of jerk his head to the side as a bottle crashes right behind him. And then there was a particular officer that seemed to be a recurring kind of person that was followed along.
Cairo,
yeah. And just to watch, you know.
He's the officer that I think de-escalates the situation after a car accident, a pedestrian is hit. Yeah, sorry, Alex. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, just to watch him kind of, because he's a new officer, right? He's encountering some of these challenges potentially for the first time other than his training, and to watch him navigate it and do it in a way that I feel like is shown in the film that a lot of people would agree with, say that's good police work, that's what we want to see in these situations instead of allowing them to escalate, as Scott mentioned.
And Pete Nix, what did you learn about policing in making this film? How did it change the way you perceive not just the Oakland Police Department, but, you know, as Alex said, it really comes through very strongly in this film, the harm that these folks put themselves into in front of just to keep people safe or to round up the bad guys?
One of the I guess more profound things that I learned is that we have to, in understanding and sort of working through this issue, we have to be able to hold multiple truths simultaneously. And that was one of the profound realizations that I was faced with immediately in the department was, on the one hand, a remarkable transparency of the department just to let me in. You know, it was a huge risk that the department took, the earnestness and the idealism of the individual officers that I met, the diversity of the academy class. And on the other hand, a lack of the ability of both individual officers and of the institution as a whole to sort of hold some of the narratives that Pastor McBride was trying to sort of communicate that contribute to a lot of the problems that we're seeing in that relationship between this institution, how they treat the community is a lack of recognition. The depth of that was a real surprise and how difficult it seemed to be that the institution had confronting this issue of race.
And I'd also say it's the inability to connect the challenges that have happened in the past to the present. And so as the film kind of unpacks, when people in the community who have had a history of structural and systemic oppression happening by the government and by police departments. When we get into these scenarios where we have multiple people in our community being killed by the police with a variety of different excuses, it makes it incredibly difficult to trust what the police are actually telling you when you don't have a construct of trust, when you don't have a construct of transparency. And that's what I think the film really brings out, is not just the deep complexity and the difficulty that law enforcement officers have in terms of trying to do their job, but also around what really begins to happen when we don't deal with the culture of protecting, the culture of standing behind the blue line. It leads us to dynamics that ultimately become unsustainable for all parties involved.
Alex Hemsley.
Well, and this, I guess, sort of a theory or an overarching idea in policing for a long time now, community policing has been brought up several times in our conversation here, right? And the idea of this need for a connection between officers on the street and people, get them out of their cars, right? That's not a new idea, but I think what we're seeing in terms of, like, police accountability, either whether it be through a local government like in San Francisco or Oakland, or what people are calling for on the streets, is that that is not enough without swift and real discipline to officers when there is misconduct. And that's something that's complicated by state law. But as there's been more attention paid to this issue, you can see departments that are really serious about navigating that to hold officers accountable, and those that are allowing the system to kind of hold that discipline up.
Pete, next.
The other thing that became really painfully obvious to me was the distorted view that officers have of this community, that they Oakland is such a rich and diverse city. The officers are responding to 911 calls over and over and again, and they're going into parts of the community that do not represent the whole community, that are economically challenged, that are dealing with poverty, lack of access to education and health care. That creates a distorted sense, I believe, in the minds of these officers.
But isn't that true of any big city?
Yeah, but I think what's happening is these officers aren't engaging enough with the deeper narrative of a city like Oakland, where you have young African-Americans who are going to Yale, where you have people running community organizations trying to make the city a better place. The officers aren't really connecting with that on a deeper level.
Ron Armstrong, what would you add to that? How do you make those connections beyond just the training classes? I mean, what do? I know you have community meetings, but as Pete suggests, it's often the communities that are angry, most tense relationships are not necessarily with the communities that are doing well by many standards.
Well, I think that you have to be intentional about your approach to it. I think that, you have to come up with strategies to engage with people, right? You have to go into communities and start making relationships through some neighborhood councils, community groups, right? Really encouraging officers. When I say get out the car, it doesn't mean just walk around. It really does mean getting to know people. If you work a certain beat, it means going and learning who lives on that beat and beginning to engage them in conversation about what the officer could do to help make them feel safer in their communities and how can they be in a better relationship with them. And so this is, a change in culture. And so we have a new chief. I mean, I think Chief Kirkpatrick is leading the police department now, and she wants to improve the relationship in the city of Oakland. And so these are new ideas and new strategies that we want to put in place, is really pushing officers to be more community oriented.
And the new chief, Ann Kirkpatrick, an outsider, the first woman to head the OPD. She came from Washington State primarily. She was the chief for three cities up in Washington State. I think she was a finalist for the job in Chicago, maybe. Alex Hemsley, just following the department under her leadership, what kind of change do you see?
Well, one big thing is not necessarily initiated by the chief, but I know it's going to be a major change for the police department, which is the start of an Oakland Citizens Police Commission, a civilian oversight body that takes over a large chunk of officer discipline and policy recommendations for the department. I mean, that is something, it's another example, I guess, of external oversight that Ann Kirkpatrick has to navigate, the biggest one being this negotiated settlement agreement through the federal courts that is some 14 years old now. She's certainly made some appearances in the community, but I'm not entirely sure about whether her reorganization of the department, I would have to defer that to another person.
Well, and let me ask LaRon Armstrong, because my sense is police departments do not like outsiders, generally speaking. They want somebody from the ranks who is part of their culture. What's your sense of how you brought her name up? So I assume you approve of the kind of leadership she's providing. But what kind of a transition is there when a new chief from outside comes in?
Well, I think, first of all, she makes changes to her command staff. And so I think, I appreciate her coming in and giving me the opportunity to be a part of her executive team, along with others that she's put on that team.
You were a lieutenant in that film. Now you're a deputy chief.
Yeah, I know. I had a couple of years at captain, and then she promoted me to deputy chief. And so I think she came in with fresh ideas. She's an outsider. She had an opportunity to come in and bring her experience. She's been a chief for a long time and been in many police departments, and so her perspective is different. And then I think she brought an idea of how we can move forward, a strategy around moving forward and acknowledging that we had a lot of work to do, but we as a department could come together.
But one of the things I think that we realize as well is that those of us who are in the community don't have a whole lot of hope around these different police chiefs coming in. We've had 7 police chiefs in the process of 3 to 4 years that I myself have been working on violence reduction work in the city. And so with all of the turnover that's happening at the command staff in the Oakland Police Department, our biggest concern is how do we take all of these innovative ideas and ensure that they get pushed down to the line officers that are actually dealing with our community members, our loved ones, our relatives, between 12, midnight and 6 o'clock in the morning. That is our greatest concern. When we see, even with the police commission trying to be enacted, and we have the police officers union, the OPOA, and Brother Barry Donlin and others who still will use the kind of language that dehumanizes our community as we think about getting other community members who may have made some mistakes in the past and may be formerly incarcerated, who could bring a very unique perspective to the commission and to have them dehumanize. Our concern is that we still are not really talking about the kind of change that needs to happen in our culture. OPD's own internal stat says that 94 to 97% of their police contact is with 3 to 6% of the population in the city. And so when the broader community says we love the police department, we say, well, of course you do, because you're not interacting with them. We want to figure out how do we get this kind of innovation down into the line officers as actually interacting with the people in our community.
Alex and then Pete.
Well, I just didn't want to gloss over the fact in changes in the command staff when Ann Kirkpatrick came in. She did receive some criticism for some promotions and some change of assignment for high-ranking officers who had some role in the OPD's initial investigation into the sexual exploitation case that we've talked about that really led to, as far as we know, the ouster of Chief Sean Wendt. And that hasn't really been explained. Now, the city is required to file what might be a detailed report on some of its findings as that case progresses in federal court by the end of this week.
Coming up on a break, Pete, did you want to say something? No? Okay, we'll come back and maybe play another clip from the film. As I mentioned, it's called The Force. It takes a deep look inside the Oakland Police Department. Director Pete Nix is with us for the hour, along with LaRon Armstrong, Deputy Chief with the Oakland Police Department, and Ben McBride, Pastor, co-director of PICO, California. They are both featured in the film, and it premieres this Friday in the Bay Area. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. We'd love to hear from you, your experiences working, living in the community of Oakland and the OPD, what your experiences are. 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. I'm Scott Schaefer. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. We're talking this hour about a new documentary called The Force. It takes a deep look inside the Oakland Police Department. Director Pete Nix is with us. He, by the way, also directed an earlier film you may have seen called The Waiting Room about Highland Hospital. And the film The Force won this year's Sundance Documentary Prize for Best Director. Congratulations on that, Pete. Also with us, LaRon Armstrong, Deputy Chief for the Oakland Police Department, and Ben McBride, a pastor in the community who's also in the film, and Alex Emsley from KQED. Let's open up the phone lines, and the number to call is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also send your thoughts to us at forum@kqed.org, or you can tweet us. We're @KQED Forum. or leave us a message on our Facebook page. There's no excuse for you got so many options. It's crazy. I want to. We were talking earlier about the importance of community involvement and also trust. Of course, is a huge issue. And there's a scene in the film where then Chief Sean Wendt is saying that the blue wall of science is BS, that doesn't exist anymore, that you're required to report serious misconduct. Laurent Armstrong, how big a problem, how big a barrier is that to overcome?
Well, I think it's a barrier that we've been dealing with for many years. I think, you know, when you're under negotiated settlement agreement for going into 14 years, I think it's clear what's expected of our officers. And I think the negotiated settlement gave us an opportunity to confront cultural issues. And so I think policy is very clear about what's expected of officers. And I think we've learned from the past. And that's, you know, what's led to some of the policies that we've created to hold people accountable. And so I think as a department, I think to the point that Chief Wendt made in the film is that you're expected to and required to report misconduct. And so I think when you have a young department like we have, I think they've come in under a different culture and a different set of policies and standards that they're being held accountable to.
And yet, Alex Emsley, that lack of reporting some of that misconduct is part of what led to Chief Wendt's departure.
The federal courts got wind of an internal affairs investigation that it cited as being irregular and raising concern about compliance with these reforms that have been going on for over a decade. And as information about like what the department knew, what certain members of the department knew and when is still kind of trickling out. And we're not certain, but it does appear that overall, according to an investigation commissioned by the federal court, there were people who were in supervisory roles up to and including the chief of police who knew about this investigation and who should have prioritized it more than it was.
Ben McBride, we've talked about what the police department and recruits and officers and the command staff need to do to improve the situation. What do you think the community needs to do in terms of its role in keeping their neighbors safe and cooperating with the police department and reducing the kinds of interactions with police that can lead to problems?
Well, you know, I think it is the role of every community member to be active in our community, contributing to the public safety and the health prosperity of all our neighborhoods. We launched a violence reduction strategy in Oakland named Ceasefire back in 2012 before we actually had the sign on of our mayor and the police department. It was the community that led the charge into now what's becoming, in partnership with the department, a near 50% reduction in homicides over the course of 5 years working together. It's been us walking the streets Friday, Saturday, Sunday. It's been us creating in-kind resources to take care of our loved ones who are at a high risk to either commit an act of violence or be a victim of violence. And so we believe that as community members, we play a very specific role in keeping our community safe, to keep them thriving. But equally, we have to hold, it is also a part of our role to hold our law enforcement department accountable to ensure that it actually is legitimate to be able to provide public safety. We oftentimes tell our law enforcement partners, you all are trained law enforcement professionals. We are not trained citizens. We are just citizens. We are not trained citizens. And so there is a higher level of accountability and focus because you are the only one that have the power to take away someone's life and freedom under the law. And so because you have that kind of power, it is our responsibility to make sure we hold that system accountable.
Pete.
You know, and it's interesting, too, because so much of with the scandal that happened, so much of what was positive that was happening at the department was lost. And going back to one of the original questions of what surprised me, you know, it was Wendt and the department as a whole, that this seemed like an incredibly progressive department that was making lots of progress. Officer-involved shootings were way down. They were at the front, leading the charge on body-worn cameras. I think they were the first department in the nation to sort of fully implement body-worn cameras. And for you know, the failures to occur in the midst of all this progress, particularly at the lead of Sean Wendt, we were trying to reconcile that sort of as storytellers. What does this mean?
And coming as it did, Alex, with a new mayor who had come on and inherited. She wasn't, I guess, not brand new, but you know. Changes at the top of the political structure are always disruptive and met with some cynicism, I think, in police departments.
I mean, I think for the first part of her term, Libby Schaff was
presiding over a city and a police department that was being held up as a model for the nation. Early adoption of body cameras was a major part of that, as well as some of these other, more nitty-gritty sort of statistical, but really achievements that the department had built in. And there was much discussion that federal court oversight would be ending soon, before the sexual exploitation case surfaced. But like other mayors before her, the Oakland Police Department became a major overriding challenge, and has remained that for about a year now.
Deputy Chief?
Yeah, and I think I want to respond to something that was mentioned earlier about the department kind of not being responsive to these issues around the scandal. I think it's been clear, obviously, that the chief has done a critical review of the Swanson report that's been issued. That report will be going to the federal judge next month. And so I think the chief has looked at these issues very critically, and I think that her review will lay out clearly what she plans to do to improve the department. And so I don't want people to believe that this went on deaf ears, that we are paying attention. The chief has done her review, and that review will go in front of the federal judge.
Yeah, Pete.
And one of the things, and maybe Alex, I don't know if you know, our understanding, and it's a point that we make in the film, and it's a very important point for people to understand, is that were it not for federal oversight, because there's a big sort of conversation happening at the national level, at the Department of Justice, Jeff Sessions talking about wanting to roll back federal oversight of police departments, that were it not for the federal oversight, some of this would never have come to light. And so that's something that was suggested in the Swanson report. And speaks to not only the mechanisms that need to be in place to address, because when you see this carousel of chiefs moving through a department, you surmise that even the most well-intentioned progressive chief cannot necessarily solve the problems that we're facing.
All right, let's go to the phones now, and we'll start in Oakland with Stefan. Welcome.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I just want to say I'm really looking forward to seeing the film. It happened since I first saw it winning awards. I think that even if you disagree that the Oakland Police Department is intrinsically racist, I think it's pretty much given that the vast majority of the people that are being policed believe that it's racist. And furthermore, there's a belief that it's a group of people who are not black, who don't live in Oakland, coming to Oakland to work to police black people. And I'm unsure as to how bringing a white lady from Spokane, who Spokane is not a particularly diverse city, how are you going to explain that to the citizens of Oakland? And, like, I've seen the lip service being paid to recruitment drives and stuff, like at strip fairs. There was one recently in East Oakland. There were two guys from the OPD sat there. They were both white. I went over and asked where they were from, and they were both from Walnut Creek. So I don't see how you can address this.
Let me just put that to Laron Armstrong. I mean, obviously diversity is important, but you don't have to be necessarily from Oakland to be able to relate to the history and understand the history and the needs of the community, right?
Right. And I think even in the film, you can see that really Ben McBride and I take the opportunity in the training setting to really teach officers around the history. Right. I think it's unrealistic to believe that you're going to have only police officers from Oakland. But I think you can still select people who come in well-intentioned, that want to do a good job and want to help make Oakland a safe community. I think you do have to have people that are interested in cultivating a relationship with the community that they work in. And I think our recruiting process is doing that. That's questions that we actually are asking our new recruits about. How do you interact in an urban environment, right? These are important issues that we can confront so that people feel comfortable working in the city of Oakland.
And do you find in general that there is a difference in the sort of, I don't know, resistance to that message of, understanding the history and working with being part of the community and having community? Is there more resistance on the part of, say, officers and recruits of color versus white or men and women? I mean, do you notice sort of a trend? And I realize obviously you can't generalize, but what do you notice?
No, I haven't seen much resistance. To be honest, during the training, we recognized the complete opposite, that Ben McBride was the highest rated presenter in the training every week.
Better than you?
Better than me, right? Surprisingly, right? I thought I was doing a really good job, but Ben was always ranked really high, and I thought it was because he bought them an authentic perspective, right? One from someone that had the ability to balance both sides and was honest with them and really challenged them to be different than the officers in the past.
But rootedness is also very important, and the sense that we have people that are policing in our communities with whom, as was stated earlier, their only interaction with people of color, with black folks, with poor black folks, with poor Latino folks, poor folks from the API community, are these elements when people might be at the worst extension of themselves or in a very drastic dynamic scenario is very concerning for us. The fact that we have people applying for the police department that don't know the racial history, that don't know the local history of the Oakland Police Department, that these are very deep concerns. And so I don't want us to gloss over the fact that when you bring in people who, because of implicit bias and other ways that we're all socialized, don't necessarily come in with a very strong competence around culture, that has a deep impact in the way in which people of color experience safety or don't.
All right, Stefan, thanks for the call. Again, the number to call if you want to join our conversation, it's 866-733-6786. Let's go now to Simon in, I think I just disconnected Simon. I'm so sorry. Simon, call back. But let's go to Bill in Oakland, if you're there.
Hello. You guys are wrestling with the big question about solving this, but I think the Oakland Police Department has a tool that they could put in effect right now, and that's get your motorcycle cop teams out in the community. I happened upon one of their shows, and it got people positive, you know, and they're awesome riders. I know, look at how many motorcycle riders are in Oakland, young, old, whatever. When I see a motorcycle cop, I just stop and watch them work. If you put a show on, a motorcycle team show, more often than you do now, I think they're limited. I'd grow the motorcycle department and let them get out with the community. You see them one-on-one, you know, sitting around in a coffee shop. There was one that used to come to a coffee shop in my neighborhood. And,
all right.
Anyway.
Yeah, well,
That's a good suggestion.
I remember in San Francisco, the big thing, everyone loved the cops on the horses, you know, and yeah. We still have those because now it's been the voters put it in the city chart.
But as someone who lives in what was dubbed 5 years ago as the kill zone of East Oakland, it's the area where the majority of the homicides are occurring, I can tell you frankly that we are not looking for more motorcycle cops. We don't want more cops on horses. We actually don't want even a heavier police presence. What we want is safer streets, safer communities, and we want to ensure that we have a law enforcement department that is legitimate, that is not complicit in exploiting our young women, is not complicit in framing our young men in the community of crime. This is not a very high bar of what we're asking for. We're simply asking that those with whom our tax dollars are funding will not be participating with illegality, but rather will actually work with the community to keep those communities safe. And it's important for us to recognize that those who are closest to the pain have to inform for us what is going on. In 2014, people in the community started telling me and other leaders that Oakland Police Department was involved in sexual exploitation of women in the communities. And even at that time, it was very difficult for us to believe. So we had to repent to those folks. And that has become a lot of the driving force around why we are so hell-bent on keeping the department accountable, because we're not dealing with a single issue. We're dealing with an institutional issue.
Well, let me push back on the notion that you don't want more police officers, because we also heard in that clip, you know, the chief talking to this woman whose house had been robbed and, you know, that didn't get a response from the department in part because they don't have adequate staffing. I mean, you know, why wouldn't more police officers be a good thing?
Because I think it's a misunderstanding that more police officers always equals more public safety. And so I believe if you translate what the woman is saying, she's saying she wants her community to be more safe. Her current understanding is that the presence of more law enforcement will actually keep those communities safe. But we proved through our ceasefire strategy that by not hiring more police officers, we were actually able to reduce violent crime without hiring more police. I think if we use more evidence-based strategies, more investment around services, opportunities, jobs, and housing, we can bring down the factors that cause people to commit crimes.
Chief Anderson, I would imagine you might disagree a little bit with that.
I think we want to be responsive to the needs of the community, that there are a lot of people that call 911 and they expect a police officer, that there's some traumatic event occurring and they want to see us there. And we want to have sufficient staff in so that we can respond in a timely fashion. And so I think the mayor has been doing the best she can to continue to increase our budget so we can get as many police officers as we can. But I think the importance is not just the increase in the number of officers, but it's how officers go out and do their jobs every day, right? And not do things that cause us to cause community to lose trust in us.
Pete, to what extent did you talk to people in the community in the making of this film, and what did they tell you about, you know, these kinds of issues, how the level of police presence and the kind of response that they want?
We met a lot of different people. We met people at protests. We met people out just with Jonna. Jonna knows so many people. She's on TV that people just walk up to her and very, very, very friendly.
She's the PIO.
For the department. We met people at high school gyms who, like the scene in the movie, who are calling for more police. And you know, it's such a diverse, community that needs different things and is expressing themselves in different ways. But part of the thing that we're trying to make with the point of our series, looking at sort of root causes underlying, is that a lot of these issues, crime, access to healthcare, education, are impacting African Americans disproportionately, to the point where you are having lots of 911 calls emanating from African American households saying, you know, we were on a call one night and there was a bunch of guys hanging out on the corner, just hanging out, and somebody had called 911. Well, who called 911? You know, more than likely that was a person of color. And so that's one of the realities that we need to try to hold these two things simultaneously next to each other.
All right, let's go back to the phones. And Simon is back from Oakland. Thank you for your perseverance, Simon. My apologies for cutting you off.
Sure, yeah, thank you. I had a question that actually dovetails really well with what your guests were talking about, evidence-based policies. What is the department doing to gather accurate statistics, data, about crime, not just arrests, but actual where crime is taking place and how policies are having measurable effects on crime? And then what sort of incentives and disincentives are being put in place by management to make those policies work? If community policing is the goal, are police being promoted who are building trust, and how is that measured?
Lauren Armstrong.
Yeah, I think to Ben McBride's point earlier, our primary strategy for dealing with violence in the city of Oakland is our ceasefire strategy. And that really is an evidence-based strategy. It's one in which we look closely at every single shooting and gunshot that's fired in the city of Oakland, and we deploy our resources based on where these events are happening, that we go out and investigate and follow up on those individuals that are at the highest risk, trying to not impact the city as a whole, not every African-American male in the city, but really focusing on those that are at the highest risk, those that are carrying guns, that are using guns, but really communicating them to them directly, even asking them, please put the guns down and not force us to use this enforcement arm. And so I think we have this evidence-based practice that's been working. I think to Ben's point earlier, we see our crime numbers as a response to that. We're currently, in this year, we have a 10% reduction in overall homicides. We hope in this year, if we keep trending in the right direction, to have a historic year when we talk about the number of people that lose their lives in the city of Oakland. So we know that these evidence-based strategies help save lives.
Simon, does that respond to your point, your question?
It does. I'm also curious about incentives from the management side. I mean, I'm hearing a lot about individual responsibility and officers on the ground having good training. But if you're promoting police who have high arrest numbers versus police who are building trust, how are you advancing that goal? And then, of course, the promotion, there's also the demotion side of that, which is officers that misbehave should be disciplined and maybe demoted. And, you know, that's been talked about as well.
Lauren?
Well, I think we hold our commanders accountable. Really, we expect them to use this strategy as a way in which to drive down crime. An example for us is that we currently make a third of the stops that we were making 10 years ago. And so it really shows that a focused enforcement effort can even reduce the amount of people that you're actually impacting. But the numbers still demonstrate that you can still see a decline in violent crime. And so it's not always about arrest. And we've made that clear within our organization. And I think for me, even sitting in this seat really says that somebody that's committed to community can still find his way promoting up to higher ranks in the organization.
Yeah, but some of the pushback still around that is this chief still did promote certain people in the department since she has arrived who have very shadowy or at worst salacious reputations in the community. I think some of the challenges that we have to think about is when the whole sexual exploitation case broke, it broke because of a suicide note from an officer who killed himself after his wife was found dead a year before, and there was rumors by their family that the officer somehow was complicit in this murder, and the people who irresponsibly handled that case were promoted as a part of this chief's changes. So when I was talking earlier in the film about history running up an incredibly high bill, and everything that we do now is either running that bill higher or bringing that bill down, it's these kinds of decisions that continue to say to us in the community that we cannot trust a department that refuses to actually be responsive to the concerns of the community.
All right, you're listening to Forum. We're talking with Ben McBride, pastor, co-director of PICO California, also Laron Armstrong, deputy chief of the Oakland Police Department. Peter Nix, who's a new film, The Force, is premiering this weekend in the Bay Area, a deep look at the Oakland Police Department, and Alex Emsley, KQED's criminal justice reporter. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio, and for more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Scott Schaefer. And we go back to the phones, and it's Kat in Oakland. Welcome.
Hi there. I just want to thank you so much for this discussion. I especially want to thank Pastor McBride and the filmmaker, and I want to share a personal anecdote to share exactly how deeply eroded the trust is in the community. As someone who's lived in Oakland for almost 25 years, and I'm a middle-aged, college-educated white woman, and I can tell you the few times that I have been desperate enough to call OPD because I myself have been a victim of violent crime or have a witness to violent crime, I have deeply regretted it. And I wanted to share a personal anecdote of recently this last weekend. During this heat wave, the neighbors on my block and I, it's a very diverse block, we were concerned about our elder, a 93-year-old woman who's lived in her home since 1967. On Saturday, she was not being responsive to calls or knocks. And we had to decide as a block what we were going to do. And out of fear for our neighbor's life, we agreed that we could not trust OPD to handle a wellness check if we were desperate enough to call them to help us help our elderly neighbor. And instead, we relied on the neighborhood grapevine to find her next of kin.
What did you base that decision on?
Well, because the last time OPD rolled through my block, they took time out of their day to stop and frisk and harass my neighbors who just happened to be young black men outside at the wrong time, who were doing nothing wrong. And that had happened just a couple weeks ago. So that memory was fresh on everyone's mind. In addition to living in East Oakland at ground zero of, the track, we live off the track where so much of the child sexual exploitation takes place. And I just want to thank your guests, everything that they have said about how much that scandal has rocked the community because it's just reinforced how much we can't trust the people who are supposedly paid to protect us and think they're it's hard not to get emotional.
No, I understand. I'm not trying to cut you off. We're just getting
community.
I'm sorry to cut you off. We're just getting to the end of the hour, and I want to give our guests a chance to respond. Pete?
I mean, that emotion and that rawness of the response is exactly why we made the film. It's exactly why it's important for us to be talking about this film. It's why the OPD needs to hear these personal expressions. I, you know, as somebody who spent three years with the OPD on the ground, you know, see the gulf, and I think there's a lot of officers who feel just like she feels, but on the opposite side, like they the way that they've been treated in the community by certain African Americans, by certain members, in terms of the the violence and the disrespect and all that, they become jaded and disrespectful and mistrustful of the community that they're supposed to protect. And that gulf and that perspective, we have to address it. It has to be addressed.
And Ben McBride, that's part of the history too.
Absolutely. And it's trauma. It's shared trauma that people are experiencing. And what our sister was just sharing on the call was the sense that the neighborhood has been traumatized by their interaction with law enforcement. And that's why we've continued to say that the way that we build trust is not by having coffee with a cop. It's not by passing out ice cream cones or stickers. I know sound on their face as very positive, and I believe that they are, ideas that people really want to do because they believe in them. We're going to build trust by transforming the system, because currently right now we have across the nation 300 police officers that commit suicide every year, when internal numbers say it's closer to 1,000. So the public safety system is failing both the target and the tool. It's in the best interest of both sides for us to transform the system.
A couple of comments here show this divide we've been talking about. One listener writes, these officers are heroes and save many more inner city residents than they harm. And then Jay writes, I'm 35 and black. My experience is the cops pull me over for small issues in Oakland all the time, a car light being out, for example. I've noticed that this happens much more in Oakland than other cities, although, Alex Emsley, that's certainly been an issue in San Francisco as well.
Oh, the issue of who gets stopped and how often, I think it's an issue in most major cities across the United States. As that data starts to get collected, you see some major disparities in terms of the race of the driver who happens to get stopped in that patrol stop.
We're just about the end of the hour. Peter Nix, I want to ask you, what do you hope people who see the film take from it?
A couple of points, I think the film makes fairly sharply is the need for the role of federal oversight in our police departments. I think there's enough evidence that there are challenges sort of culturally within these departments that we are going to require federal oversight moving forward, but also the role that the community plays, that the civilian commission that has been formed as a result of the work that a lot of citizen groups have done to push that onto the ballot and to get it passed in November, that piece that creating a new model for community safety, as Pastor McBride has talked about, is really something that we need to keep our eye on.
All right. And again, the film is called The Force, and it premieres this weekend in the Bay Area in San Francisco, Berkeley, Pete, and Oakland.
Berkeley, Oakland, San Francisco, and San Rafael.
All right, very good. Pete Nix, documentary filmmaker, thanks so much for joining us. Thanks also to LaRon Armstrong, deputy chief with the OPD, Ben McBride, a pastor there in Oakland, a co-director of PICO, California, and our own Alex Emsley. Thank you all very much for joining us. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. I believe Michael is back tomorrow. And my name is Scott Schaefer. It's been fun to be here. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.